Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, Seekers, to episode number 128 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by Seekers and for Seekers. If all goes as planned, this episode should release on or about the last Friday in September of the year 2021. What are our shout-outs, Trayson?
Our shout-outs are to Renard, Ronnie, Ravine, Karen, and Michael. And if I messed any of your names up, I'm so sorry. I do my best, but...
We're sometime. From Arkansas.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Blake. Blake still listens all the time.
Yeah, and so Blake.
Blake, I just want to holler out at my grandson. Our quote for the day, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again while expecting a different result, and that has been attributed to Albert Einstein. I don't think that somebody heard him quote that. Somebody said he said that. So anyway.
All right, that quote might loosely apply to our episode topic today. In this episode, we're going to ask the question, is the organized church ready for a paradigm shift in its doctrine? And if you were like some of us the first time we heard the phrase paradigm shift, we didn't have a clue what it meant. No. So to explain in terms we might relate to, an example of a paradigm shift is when the mainstream way of thinking went from believing that the sun orbited the earth to accepting the fact that the earth actually orbits the sun.
Or that the earth is round and not flat. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are all paradigm shifts. And now it's things you think, well, how could anybody have ever thought that the sun went around the earth?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it seems so strange to us, but that's what a paradigm shift is. And we're talking about it. Is the church ready? Is it time for a paradigm shift in its doctrine?
To quote Frank Sinatra, in other words, when we have acquired enough evidence presenting a new understanding of a subject, we abandon our antiquated mindset of how we previously thought about the subject in favor of a way of thinking more in line with the new evidence. While the scientific community is really reluctant and sometimes slow to make such a paradigm shift, it's almost an impossibility for the religious community to make a shift. It usually takes a great upheaval in the organization, which is usually quickly put down by those who consider themselves the defenders of the faith and who are actually defenders of the organization and the way that it operates.
I like how she said that like it was a super defenders of the faith.
Yeah, superheroes.
I spent all morning watching superhero movies, so that might have been part of the problem.
So with this said, what are some of the paradigm shifts that the Christian religion, or the church, if you will, is facing at this moment? I'm talking about topics that and doctrines that they must address, or we must address, if it is to continue to be an influence in our society.
There are so many.
There are many. Some will be much harder than others. The most difficult paradigm shift, one that may be impossible short of a complete collapse of the organization, is that the Bible is a single divine work, handed to man directly from God, meaning that it being divine itself, it is without human influence and therefore void of conflicting statements, and it is a work that is infallible, it's without error.
And 10 years ago, this was a hill to die on for me. As far as the Bible being really?
It's still a hill to die on for lots of folks. Yeah. Just say I couldn't have said this out loud 20 years ago.
No.
Right.
I mean, without some kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know that it would lead to physical, but it would have been, there would have been ostracizing and all kinds yes. of stuff, you know. I mean, that still occurs. I'm ostracized right now, but that doesn't matter.
Well, I can remember 20 years ago when you moved from, when you started reading from a different translation besides just the King James, oh, yeah. that people got mad and we had a person leave the church oh, yeah. because of, so something that small, and then you say, oh, well, this is not infallible, can cause problems. Well, the evidence that the Bible is a collection of works, for the most part, of unknown authorship and origin, and that it has been edited and translated by individuals and groups who held long-established religious and political interests and influences, is overwhelming. You have to plug your ears and close your eyes to this fact in order to maintain the argument that the Bible is divine, and therefore the complete and whole work concerning God's interaction with humanity.
Now, let me say and put a disclaimer here. I still read the Bible. I read it from a different point of view now. Mm-hmm. I read it with the understanding that these were people seeking God. That's why I put much more emphasis mm-hmm. on what is recorded that Jesus said.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And even the narrative around what Jesus said, you've got to watch. The narrative around it, that whoever wrote, like let's say the book of Matthew or the book of, you know, Mark or whoever, and they'll say Jesus said this because, and then they'll try to tell us what he meant and the reason he said. We've got to be careful even about those narratives that are in the Bible itself, yeah. because they automatically, we believe what that person said,
and
it
almost,
changes the way
it's
it changes
subliminal too.
Yes,
you don't
it is.
Even realize it's kind of like the news. When you watch the news and they slide their commentary in there, and without realizing it, your whole viewpoint has
yeah
changed. Do you feel like he's fixing to pull a Thomas Jefferson and write his own Bible?
Oh no
No, I'm not. In fact, we need to get away from having a document that is the basis of our, a single document that is the basis for our
whole spiritual experience. That has been the most amazing part of my spiritual growth, is when I will now read the Bible, but I went for over a year that honestly, I didn't even open it because I was taught everything I needed was in that book. When I started looking inside of me and that spirit that lives in me yeah. and just, oh man, that changed my whole.
The voice. The voice yes. is in you. You don't need an external voice.
No.
There's an internal voice that we have. And even that book is an external voice.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for an external mm-hmm. voice instead of looking for it inside. I think you're forward, Trayson.
Okay, so the evidence that the Bible is a collection
let's
of...
Let's go with five. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that did sound familiar.
Yeah.
The main reason that this single obstacle in the long list of items that demand a paradigm shift is the most difficult is actually simple. The church, beginning with the Catholic and carried on by the Protestant movement, has built its whole empire on the fundamental idea that the Bible itself is divine. Therefore, to make a shift on this single mindset would risk total collapse of the whole pyramid. The church as we know it today has painted itself into the proverbial corner and will resist the challenge of the Bible not of the Bible being divine, even in the light of clear evidence that it is not.
Another paradigm shift that demands to be addressed are the very topics of our last two episodes. That's the mindset and teaching that because of Adam's disobedience, every human being is born the enemy of God and will spend eternity suffering in torment merely on the basis of being kin to Adam. We mentioned that a little bit in one of our, I think our last episode in August, maybe. We mm-hmm. talked about that just a little. If you haven't already, go back and listen to the last two episodes so you'll be up to speed. We have presented some good reasoning of why this mindset is detrimental to the yes. church's message. And so it is so out of character with the image of love and forgiveness that Jesus tells us, you know, what the true character of God the Father really is. Mm-hmm. And it's in conflict with who Jesus says mm-hmm. he is.
The next mindset that demands a paradigm shift is that of the Old Testament claim of the Israelites that they committed their acts of inhumanity on innocent people at the command of God. And that was last week's mm-hmm. episode topic. And the main takeaway is that if God wants someone dead, he don't have to come to me and tell me to kill them. And what is especially troubling is that we incorporate into our Christian religion this image of a God who would have one group of humans callously slaughter a whole other group of people just to acquire their land. And then we want to turn around and say God is love.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we pointed out, if you read those events and remove the God told us to do it, you're left with a very troubling picture of the acts of the infant nation of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another mindset that mindset that requires rethinking is the whole one-size-fits-all eternal torment known as hell.
Let me say something right there. I smiled a little bit. Matter of fact, I laughed out loud. Tracy, you put the title of the very last, this is the one I was thinking of, the very last episode.
I know. I realized after I did it. I know what you're going to say.
The title of it is Revisiting Hell. The original was, Is Hell Eternal Torment? And I opened it up and it said, Revisiting Hell. And I thought, I'm going back to high school. I don't know. Somebody saw that and thought, they're going to review my first marriage. I don't know what that was.
I was supposed to. I put little, like, short placeholder titles on things when I save them.
Right.
And then when I go back and I post them, I change the names to something longer. And I forgot on that one, and I sent it before, and it was out everywhere, and I went, well
that's fine.
Done.
Redo number 8, I stepped in on you.
No, you're fine. So another mindset that requires rethinking is the whole one-size-fits-all eternal torment known as hell. We don't have the time to make the argument that the church has got the doctrine of hell wrong, but we would love for you to visit our episode on Is Hell Eternal Torment? Or you can revisit hell in an episode from last month.
Yeah.
We think that we make our case for a reconsideration and an all-out paradigm shift on this matter. The most difficult task of the defenders of this one-size-fits-all eternal punishment is that it means that the young person who wasn't raised in the church environment, therefore doesn't adopt the church's stance on salvation, is going to writhe and suffer for eternity alongside the Hitlers and the Neros of history. And this is not at all in line with the character of a God of love, mercy, and forgiveness. You know, the God that Jesus talked about and represented.
Yeah. Another paradigm shift is the exclusiveness and the intolerance of those who don't share the church's image of an angry and vengeful, jealous God who, through methods of fear, demand that we love him. We've addressed this topic in various episodes, but in short, we only need to ask ourselves one question. Can the object of our intense fear ever become the object of our devoted love?
No.
And we think God knows enough about us as humanity to know that we can't fear and love him at the same time. He is our designer, and we aren't designed to be able to love that which we fear.
True. The church will have to address the idea that perhaps Jesus didn't just come to save a select few that will openly embrace him before they die. The angel told Mary that she was to give birth to one who would take away the sins of the whole world. In other places, he is presented as the one who will save the whole world. And as to the claim that we must embrace him before we die, are we not told he took the good news to the spirits in chains? Might there be much more to the statement, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess? Might the main reason the church has difficulty embracing the universal Christ is that it removes them from their position of gatekeeper and keyholder, deciding who is in and who is out? And this is where ego plays a huge, huge
Absolutely.
Role.
Absolutely.
Because as long as you're doing something to accept, and I wonder if that's why this whole thing came into being. I always go back and think, because you have to have something you do to make your ego feel good about accomplishing something.
And you know that the very idea of accepting can really put you into that line of, I've done something, I've chosen to accept, therefore it's on me.
Well, I've chosen and you haven't, so automatically I'm better than you.
Exactly.
Well, and listen, religion has a collective ego.
Yes.
Not just a personal ego.
Right.
There's a collective ego at stake here. And so everybody feels threatened when you ask these questions. Everyone's getting threatened. But I think our listeners are very smart.
Yes.
They are.
I think they're seeking, just like we are. I don't think they perceive that we're trying to give them all the answers. We're trying to give them the right questions to ask. So they can reevaluate. It would be different if we were saying, well, let us tell you how this works. And we don't know. We don't know how all of this works. But we do know that it doesn't make sense.
We don't know how it works. And I don't think that we all have to have come to the same conclusion that this is how it is.
Nobody ever came to the same conclusion in any of this.
No.
Nobody ever has.
And I know that the church, the modern organized church, demands that you have to believe the same. But even sitting around this table, we all have differing views on, you know.
I do want to invite people before I start in on this next one. We have a new Facebook group for God Beyond the Bible that is called God Beyond the Bible Private Discussions. Anything that you post within that group, your friends can't see it. You know, the people on your friends list, it'll just be other people within that group. So you are more than welcome to go join that. Because I know sometimes people are a little uncomfortable with commenting on our Facebook page because you may not be in a place as a seeker where you're ready to kind of out yourself to everybody. And we just wanted to make a little bit of a safe place where you guys can come and talk to other like-minded people and just visit with other people who are kind of on the same journey as you. So back to our discussion, as it stands on these issues right now, the church seems to be doubling down on its position concerning them. It's impossible to know whether the church will ever change these policies, dogmas, and doctrines to reflect serious consideration of these conflicts and to accommodate the age in which we live. But one thing is certain. The organized church and its present course is quickly losing its constituency and support. In our humble opinion, it's aligning itself with extreme political movements and philosophies and it's not helping its plight at all.
No, absolutely not. Some question whether the church as we know it will survive, at all if it doesn't openly and honestly address and amend its antiquated positions that serve only to satisfy its hunger and thirst for power and gain. As hard as it is for those of us that have spent years in the Christian religion and the organized church to admit, we have not done well to promote the grace, peace, mercy, forgiveness, and unconditional love of God, of whom we are told that it is not His will that any should perish, but that all should come to knowledge of the truth.
Well, with that being said, until next time, may that unconditional grace, peace, and love of the Most High be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.